Welcome to the 14th episode of the Reckless Dice Podcast, where we discuss Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay 3rd Edition. I'm the co-founder of Reckless Dice and your host, Jesse Gitzman-Burke. With me tonight are Lester Crow and his strolling bones, Kodan the Barbarian, and our special guest, Michael Wilson, also known as Doc the Weasel. Welcome, everyone.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Hey.
So what have you guys been up to this week?
Well, you know, I just finished college, 20 years strong, you know, so I'm excited about that. Pretty much just relaxing. Finishing the 4th of July was kind of great and nice little R&R and kind of looking forward to get back in. Had my first gaming session this Wednesday. Woo! Excited about that.
So, nice. Anybody else get any good gaming in?
No. I'm actually prepping the game that you're going to be running in on Sunday, so.
Which I'm thrilled about. Yep, I've got my Grave Robber ready to go.
Yeah, that's gonna we're be inserting you right into the action, so it's like, you know.
Oh, really? It'll be like the battle's already raging, and I open up the door and begin fighting.
Yeah, like the gang member's already beating you up, and they're like, hey, we wanted to beat the gang members up, and then, you know, wackiness ensues.
Jesse's used to walking into things. It's nothing new.
I'm used to opening the door and joining a fight.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, guys, how's it going? Guys, oh, my God, you've got this!
Yeah. Well, it's better than that hour and a half of here's the existing party and here's the new person and what's going on. I don't know. Okay, let's sit in the bar for a while and not say anything.
No. I'm your long-lost brother twice removed on your mother's side.
Now, see, we must make a note that we are missing Paul, and Paul right now would have interjected and said, already a minute and 15 seconds into it and we're off track, but, you know, Paul, we missed you. Paul's not with us today, but he'll be hopefully with us the next episode, so...
Yeah, he has, while the father's away, the kids will play.
Yes.
So hopefully we'll have a fun episode tonight. We've got pretty light news week this week, but we are going to be covering our speculations on what we think the new iteration of the Sifting Through the Shadows will be for the next year. And if you recall, the Sifting Through the Shadows PDF document, which was released at Gen Con last year, was about a 10 or 11 page document outlining what Fantasy Flight was going to be producing over the course of the last 12 months for Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay 3rd Edition. So we're really hoping to see another iteration of that. So we're going to, you guys are going to get the benefits of our esteemed knowledge and expertise in the field, as well as what we just really want to see. And then after that, we're going to take another stab at a racial content block where we're going to cover ogres in kind of all their forms, both the chaotic and normal ones, and how they work in the Empire. And we'll answer a few questions, and then we'll wrap it up. So after the break, we'll get on with the news.
In the news today, we are going to talk about several different things, the most exciting of which, in my opinion, is not actually Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay per se. It is the announcement of the Blood Bowl card game. And apparently this game is coming out in the fourth quarter of 2011, and it's going to be, or it is developed by Jay Little, who's the lead developer on Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, the 3rd edition. It looks really awesome. They announced that, I think it was 2 days ago on the website.
So I haven't seen that. How do you, I mean, I've played the board game, and I love the lore, just style of it. Have any of you guys ever integrated any Blood Bowl stuff into any of your games?
No, personally, no, not at all.
But, I mean, Fantasy Flight's made some really good card games. They came out with a Deathwing, which is the Space Hulk card game, which everybody didn't think was going to be that great of a game, but actually turned out to be a pretty cool.
I heard good things about that.
Yeah, I own it, and it's a lot of fun. It's a game that you can play by yourself. I'm not sure about this game, what direction they're taking the Blood Bowl card game. They haven't really disclosed whether it was going to be a collectible card game.
It's not. It's a standalone game. You buy the box, and you have everything. There's dice, there's counters, there's multiple different sizes of cards, and the cool thing is there's six different factions in it. So I believe you get the Reichlanders, the Dwarves, Skaven, Orcs, Chaos, and I can't recall what the last one was.
I think it'd be great to do an adventure centered around or involving a Blood Bowl team and like a season or a match, like maybe one of the teams is about to get sabotaged or something and you're trying to uncover it. So you're like, you know, kind of helping out in the background of a stadium or something. That'd be a pretty interesting setting.
That'd be pretty fun.
You could have a lot of fun and interesting things with that. And what, you know, if any of our listeners have ever tried incorporating any Blood Bowl into their games, I'd be curious to see how they've done it, if at all. Because I think technically Blood Bowl is sort of separated from the canon in a lot of respects.
Yeah,
I think we had some discussions on that in a previous episode. As much in my head as I like to pretend it's perfectly linked into the world, it's kind of not. But you know, I kind of like to allow that bridge to stay connected.
Yeah, I got totally told that it was. You guys are like, "Well, wait a minute, it totally."
Yeah,
is
I was. Well, I'm I
like, well,
you're right. You're right.
Know.
Yeah, I was totally convinced it was, and somebody told us otherwise, and I had to kind of just concede to that one, even though I don't want to.
I think it would be canon in the more comical aspects of the game, or the game setting, but it all depends. It's like, the thing I find about Warhammer is you can make it as gritty and dark as you want, or as comical as you want.
Yep.
It's kind of got a good sliding scale, or as high fantasy or as low fantasy as you want. So I really like that about it.
But, and for some people, cheating is mandatory in this game. So
yeah, well, exactly. There's actually, that's like a stage in the game, as far as I understand right now, is you cheat in this card game. It's got a really good tagline, but if you want more in-depth information on it, we can add a link to the description section in the show notes. But it seems like it's going to be a really excellent card game.
Yeah, I'm excited.
I'm really excited for it myself.
And it's only $34.95. Not bad.
Really?
Yeah, over 150 player cards and match cards. I'm looking at the Fantasy Flight. 4 scoreboards, 2 tackle dice, a rule book, 50 team and staff upgrade cards, and then 50 customizable tokens. So I think with customizable tokens, it means that you can add your own kind of flair to it, which is actually kind of cool. So,
yeah. Yeah, it seems excellent.
Cool.
All right. Well, in other news, our friend Mark Meredith over at DiceMonkey.net just did an interview with Jesse. It's actually really good. I highly suggest going and bookmarking or adding Dice Monkey to your Google Reader or whatever. It's an excellent website.
He does do a really nice blog kind of covering gaming and just kind of fun pop culture stuff in general. And him and I had some fun talking, and the interview went up on today, the 20th. So if you need to roll down, depending on how many entries are up there before or when, by the time this episode airs, you might need to scroll down a bit, but kind of covers the creation of Gitzman's Gallery, the map, and a little bit of podcast. So
that the was epic a
fun time
wow.
with me. The epic, the Ishmat wow, which still has not made a lot of progress in the last month or two. I've been busy, but it's dangerously close to getting beyond the scope of being able to handle it.
You'll need a NASA computer to run it soon.
I already do. My computer's pretty badass, and it's having a really hard time handling it now. 16 gigs of RAM is not enough anymore.
No?
Yeah.
Too little?
Hmm. The file's almost that big.
You need to move to the terabytes, buddy. Join the real age.
Yeah, I'm so tempted to print that map off, but it just seems like a very implausible thing to do. I don't have enough wall space in my house.
It actually did, in this iteration, graduate to a wall-sized document, not just a frameable piece. So it's actually wallpaper at this point.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, what's the status on that character creation episode that we did a few weeks back there, Jesse?
I'm hoping to put that up this weekend. This episode we're airing right now should go up near the end of the week, and that episode just needs to have some final editing done to it, and then we'll post it. So hopefully very soon.
Okay,
but that was the one, as you recall, we ran our crew through the character creation process from start to finish, including how to generate kind of introductory storylines or how to kind of go about interrelating the characters as we create them. So hopefully you guys will find that very beneficial.
On a side note too, are we all available to run that game with Neil Foster?
Oh, to do round two of the fantasy rounds?
Yeah,
he did invite us back. I'm available. I'd really like to, and I'd like to be able to do a screen capture of that for the second iteration of it and post that for the listeners, because I think you guys will find that to be a pretty exciting addition to the digital gaming community.
Oh, yeah, I'm floored at how much he's added to that. It's really impressive. Plus, the character I've created for that is pretty funny, so I can't wait to get back to that character.
Cool. So then kind of in the last couple little tidbits for everybody, we created a Google Plus account for the Reckless Dice. So if you guys happen to see us float by on there, make sure and add us to one of your circles. We'll try and do the same and use that as an active promotion community as well. Lastly, for those of you who tried to access the site last week, we did have a couple days of downtime. We apologize for that. I'm just going to go out on a limb and assume the forces of chaos were tinkering with our server. So all seems to be well now, and it's back up and running. So thank you for your patience. And we're back. So for our main topic this episode, we're looking to talk about the Sifting Through the Shadows 2.0. We're expecting again to see a plan of attack for Fantasy Flight for their year's worth of releases, or at least a large chunk of it, of where they're going to be sending this game, how they're going to be supporting it over the next 12 months. We really have heard nothing beyond the Blackfire Pass expansion leading us... I take that back. There was the one hint that they dropped that the Slaanesh expansion would be coming at some point, but with literally no details beyond that. So, Michael, what are you looking forward to seeing in the realm of reality, and what are you looking forward to seeing in the this is what Michael wants?
Oh, okay. Let's see. I'm actually really looking forward to the Slaanesh thing, just because what it looks like they're going to do is add nobles to that, just because there's been a couple of hints through some of the earlier supplements.
What hints are those?
Well, I saw, let's see, well, they started adding the noble trait to some of the careers, and then there's something mm-hmm. in the Khorne book, the Chaos one for Omens of War.
Omens of War. Mm-hmm.
Where they almost line the four of them up. Where they describe each of them, and it almost ties directly into what the supplements have been, and the one they did for Slaanesh was nobility.
So do you think they're going to be doing nobility in addition to, like, the merchant class and social actions, or do you think we're going to see...
It could be. Maybe, like, an upper class, that, you know, like the kind of...
The gold tier.
Yeah, something like that. That'd be really interesting.
I think we're certainly going to be seeing that paired notion continued throughout all their supplements, because I think everything to this point has had kind of a good guy and a bad guy section of the supplement. So, you know, you had like Khorn, and then you had the military, the Empire military. You had Nurgle, and then the priests.
Yeah, and then going back to what I think is probably going to happen next is in my mind, they're probably going to release another adventure, just because they've been staggering them a lot, where it's like supplement, adventure, supplement, supplement, adventure.
Probably thinking then that the Slaanesh expansion is probably not going to be the next one.
Well, I think the next one, I think it'd be Slaanesh, and then after that, they'd probably pop out an adventure but the adventures always have like some kind of location and some other kind of, you know, some other information. So it might be like, oh, you're going to go to, I don't know. So you're going to have this town involved, and there might be some greenskin, information. So you're going to have all the stuff for greenskins or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mordheim and undead.
Yeah. I mean, they had, was it Marienburg? And then they had the witch stuff.
The witch's song did incorporate Marienburg a bit.
Yeah, I mean, well, they have that stuff. Yeah, so they seem to be pairing things off a little bit. And so that's probably what, you know, I'm thinking there's probably an adventure involved. And then after that, what I'd like to see is, it's something maybe like a similar treatment for the elves, to Blackfire Pass.
The High Elf expansion seems like an obvious one. At some point, and I'm guessing within the next 12 months, that seems really reasonable. What would you expect the High Elf supplement to contain? What would be the appropriate racial pairing for that one?
The thing I would like them not to do is to try and pair Wood Elves and High Elves, just because I don't think, from what I've seen for how much content they give, like for what they're doing for Blackfire Pass, like the notion of here's a city and here's some stuff to go for that race seems to be a good amount of material. But splitting up, because I've seen a number of people on the forum say, oh, I want a wood / high elf supplement. I'm like, I don't know if you can get enough information for either the wood elves or the high elves.
What if my thought was that the high elves would be paired with the dark elves?
Yeah, that's what I would say.
Oh, The
only part that holds me back there is that the dark elves, minor spoiler alert here, is that the dark elves were featured rather prominently in the Witch's Song, but certainly nothing of Naggaroth and anything like that, really just a kind of a token effort. But that seemed like a natural pairing for those two, and I wouldn't assume that the High Elves and the Wood Elves would actually be paired together, because those are both two good guy races, and I don't think that the way their supplement structure is set up in that they would pair two good things together. They often everything to date has been a good thing and a bad thing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I would think some kind of city or location.
Yeah. Well, I would think that it would be, if they do the Wood Elves separately from the Elf supplement, I would assume they would do like Bretonnia and the Wood Elves. Because Bretonnia is kind of like a gray area. Are they good? Are they bad? I mean, they fight
they're kind
of
teared
chaos,
up with the Empire during times of like of war when it's needed. Maybe the Wood Elves would be tied to a Beastman supplement.
Possibly, yeah.
Possibly, yeah. Another thing that another supplement I think is starting to get to where it's really needed is something to take player characters beyond rank 3. Just because just about now, I think people who've been playing for a while are either hitting rank 3 or they're now at the ceiling of rank 3. And for a lot of careers, it's kind of like, I'll just pick another career and go. But for a number of people, I think they want to see something a little bit more, especially if you're a wizard or a priest or something.
Yeah, exactly. Move to war priest or something like that, for sure. Yeah.
Well, everybody wants to advance their careers, and right now there's not as far as you can go with the...
I think Omen's introduced the most sophisticated careers to date, isn't that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. What? So that would probably lead into something like a detailed campaign or perhaps a high-level adventure somewhere that is not in the Empire, most likely. What do you guys think? Something like in the World's Edge Mountains, maybe in the Badlands, maybe the Darklands, maybe up in Kislev?
Yeah, I think the idea of Kislev, assuming that what they're doing is building up to the Storm of Chaos, or whatever that was called when Archaon invades.
Yeah, Storm of Chaos. Uh-huh.
I'm assuming they're building up to that by, you're gathering the four forces of chaos and through the four supplements, and then they will release a big campaign that has to do with the...
I think you're onto something there. Yeah, because they did set the timeline prior to the Storm of Chaos happening. Mm-hmm. So that would be a very appropriate build-up for a multi-part campaign release building towards the Storm of Chaos.
It'd be a great excuse to add Elven magic, too, if you could. I don't know how you could really go about doing that. I mean, it seems like a pretty touchy subject. I've seen a couple discussions on that on the forums, and it's quite touchy. Trying to see if it is at all possible to bring them in,
That's right. We did have some discussions on that, huh? Yeah. That would also mean that Talibheim would be prominently featured.
Yeah.
I think that's Mordheim. Where the end battle.
Yeah, it is where the final battles. But and Mordheim, they fight outside the walls of Mordheim too. They're turned at the walls.
Interesting. What other supplements do we think? So I think we've kind of decided that the Slaaneshi supplement and the nobles is a very realistic expectation for the near future, and that would complete out what everybody kind of considers the required supplements.
Yeah.
And beyond that, everything's kind of like up for grabs. The high elves we know are coming at some point because they're a featured race in the as a playable race. Wood Elves, additionally, are a featured race, so we know they're coming at some point.
Yeah, they've also said that they're going to do something. They already promised that they would bring the halflings back, so that's pretty much a guarantee.
That was actually where I was about to go. So what do we think? Let's pretend halflings are coming. In what capacity do we see them entering the game?
In a meat pie.
Chopped up.
where they belong. These little halflings taste delicious.
I know everybody has a love-hate relationship with halflings. I'm not really a fan, but I know some people are just to die for them.
I hear they make great darts for over dartboard. There you go. It ties into our ogre theme. There we go. Let's get some halflings so we can play some halfling darts.
There you go. What do you guys think of halflings? You guys like them? You hate them?
I like them, but I mean, I probably would never really play one, but I do like their flavor, and I like, as a game master, I would like to have more official rules in the game to run them as NPCs and stuff like that, because I find them interesting enough to want to include, and they are an important, in quotations, part of the Empire, so, you know.
I agree with Lester. You know, I'm a little upset that they got their own, you know, franchise of movies through Lord of the Rings. But you know, I think that you know, I think they would play very well as an NPC. I wouldn't see myself building one as a, you know, as a.
So let's pretend. Career. Let's pretend that the Halfling supplement is announced. What gets paired with the Halflings?
Ogres.
Mm. Yeah, I was going to say ogres. I mean, that.
I think they may end up pairing the halflings with, like, another kind of adventurer's toolkit or something, mm-hmm. where it's like, here's a bunch of player stuff. Oh, and by the way, here's halflings, you know.
Well they could do that to address that the high-level content you're talking about. They could be like
halflings.
They could be like the player's box, Mark II, and they could have information. But, I mean, with something like that, though, with a player's... the player's vault, you don't get a book, right? So you're assuming that if they're going to introduce new rules for halflings, that you'd at least have a book. I don't think it would be just a small box like that. So
What if the halflings were introduced with a thieving kit?
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
you know, they've kind of hit up combat careers, they've hit up magic, they're going to be hitting up the nobility and social careers with Slaanesh. We're still leaving a hole for the Skullduggerous-esque. That's right, that was a theory at one point that they are going to be...
I still think they're coming in that, because, I mean...
And the reasoning...
They feed the nobles and all that, and I mean, it's a good...
Well, they're very gluttonous.
Them, I think. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Self-serving culture.
It's all about extremes, and that's kind of what Slaanesh is all about. It's all about excess and extremes. So I have a feeling that there will be a little section there that details how you can play a halfling. That's yet to be seen, but I do have a feeling that that's where we'll see them.
So what about something like the undead? You know, we've got the Khemri or the Tomb Kings, who were recently released by GW, and then we've also got the more stereotypical Sylvanian undead. What do you guys see them getting their own supplement anytime soon?
I would hope so.
Tied in with like an adventurer or something.
Yeah, I totally agree with Mike. I definitely agree with Mike.
That, or they could do kind of like how they did the monsters vault, the creatures vault. They might do the undead vault. You know, you think that there's enough background to cover. I mean, you've got Khemri, you've got the vampire counts. You know, there's a lot of rich history with those. I would think that they might just do a book within themselves, not put them in an adventure, because it's too short to put an adventure. I mean, honestly, the vampire counts have been around many centuries in the old world, mm-hmm. and so is Khemri. And I think that with the history that they have, Fantasy Flight wouldn't just, here, we'll put them in an adventure. I think that they would use it as a selling point to create a book for an undead. You know,
yeah,
Book of the Undead.
Liber Necris or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Make it and do a vault, kind of like how they did with the creatures, because with the creature vault, they brought creatures from all the different parts of the old world and brought them in. There was, you know, rat ogres, there was dragons, you know, there was, you know, all these different things that were brought into the one book. Why? Because I feel that there was a lot of information that it was too much to just put in a short adventure, so they sold it as a creature's vault.
Do you guys think the potential for a like creature vault 2.0 or like a supplement to the creature's vault is a possibility?
Yeah, I think they're going to release player's vault and player's book 2 and game master's 2 and all that. I do believe that's coming.
So not a revamp, but a supplement in a similar capacity or similar format?
Yeah, just like a 2.0, exactly. Because they got to cover in the player's handbook, they're going to have to cover new content that's come out. So things like hedge magic that isn't covered in the player's manual, and they're going to also want to cover the supplements from Omens of War, like severe injuries, and also the stuff that's going to come out in Slaanesh. So I do have.
You think they're going to reprint the books, or
no.
And include that content, or make additional books so you would have both of them?
Make additional books so you would have Player's Guide 1 and Player's Guide 2, Game Master's Guide 1, Game Master's Guide 2, and so on and so forth.
You know, I'm thinking that the those races that are really hard to pair with something like the undead, I think I like the idea that they would be incorporated into an adventure, but also be the focus of that adventure. So you'd be provided the adventure book for which incorporate the undead, but then you also get like the Liber Necris as well, which is your undead focus book.
Well, you could do like a campaign where it takes you from the Empire and eventually leads you to Khemri, and through the campaign you can unlock the history of the undead on the world. And there's all sorts of ways you could go about doing that.
So, Michael, what's one of the ones that we haven't mentioned yet, one of the races that you're excited about that you really don't think will likely show up this year?
Is this a segue then?
Ogres.
Oh, okay, not ogres.
We'll save them for the end.
Unless you like ogres and you want to say that, of course.
I actually had to research ogres because I had no idea of anything about ogres going into this. Actually, ogres look pretty good, but we'll save that for later. As far as races, like PC races, because...
You know, really, just there's a lot going on in the Warhammer world that hasn't been touched yet, that had been touched in prior editions. So we've got things like the Lizardmen, who are essentially in the modern world equivalent of South America, in a land called Lustria.
Mm-hmm.
They have not yet made an appearance in any of the role-play games, to my knowledge, unless it's been in a really small capacity.
Once again, that's a great chance for them to do a campaign flavored adventure that takes place in Lustria. You take a boat to Lustria and you go through the steaming jungles and discover the Lizardmen. And you could throw dark elves in there because the dark elves are from the same continent. And or the rat, it could be Lizardmen and Skaven kind of thing.
Yeah, that would be actually a very appropriate match. I think the likelihood of the Dark Elves and the Lizardmen being tied into the same supplement is probably next to zero.
Well, yeah,
historically and from a canon perspective, there is a reason they could be together. But then we've also got
the High Elves. They have to be with the High Elves. It makes the most amount of sense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Then we've got the more obscure areas like Araby, Cathay, Astalia, Tilia. Some of those places which were really never mentioned much. They were always kind of those areas that even Games Workshop as a whole has never really gone into, except for kind of here or there or in very early editions of the game. Do you guys think any of those are going to get some attention, or do you think they're going to kind of get left as they have been?
I
don't think it's likely, but I'd like to see some stuff on there. I mean, we were talking about Bretonnia earlier, and that'd be awesome. But
yeah, for sure.
Even Bretonnia is a little obscure.
Yeah,
not as much, but...
But that one is more likely to happen than, say, Astalia or Ind or Cathay. Like, they never touch on those, so...
So what about everybody's favorite, Chaos Dwarves?
Aren't they just dwarves?
Someone took away their alcohol, that's why they're just angry.
Yeah, they're out in the Darklands, which is out to the east of the World's Edge Mountains.
Yeah.
And then beyond them is the ogres in the ogre kingdoms. So those are two races that I think are unlikely to see a lot of love in any specific capacity. I think they might get a little mention here and there, like, oh, here's an ogre character. Have fun.
Yeah,
is there even an ogre? Is there an ogre in the Monsters Manual?
Just dragon ogres, I think. I don't think there's just a straight
ogre. So we don't
even
get the basic ogre. Interesting.
No. I think that'll come in Creatures Vault too, so
that's kind of an interesting omission, don't you think?
Yeah.
Well, that one especially because it's something that you could encounter in the Empire. It's not like, oh, well, you know, thousands of miles to the east, you might find these guys. It's like, no, you might find them while you're walking down the street of Ubersreich. So
exactly.
Well, with that, let's take a quick break and kick it off into some ogre chat.
Ogres.
Sing us out, Dan.
That's all I got, man. I've been sitting here for 45 minutes. That's the only thing I could cut out right now.
The voices. And we're back. So today's main topic is going to be all about ogres. Ogres have a very interesting and unique relationship with the Empire and the Warhammer world as a whole. not, it seemed probably a little bit of an obscure choice for us, but we had a little bit of an enthusiastic request from Lester to do the ogres, so I thought we should, we'll have some fun with it.
Well, I just figured we're never going to see them in any supplement for Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, the third edition, so what better place to get your information than the Reckless Dice Podcast?
That's right, we will make it happen. Yes. So where will we be seeing ogres, or where would it, just to kind of start us off, maybe even before that, what is the Warhammer ogre? You know, where does what if I said you encountered an ogre, give me your quick pitch on describing one.
They are massive. They stand about 8 to 10 feet tall.
They smell.
Yeah, they all have facial hair. It is speculated that that is to catch the bits of food that fall from their disgustingly twisted mouths.
They are gingivitis.
They're well known to not brush their teeth.
Nice.
And they will eat human flesh. That's a common
thing. I think I recall they will eat just about anything.
Yes, pretty much anything. They call them Iron Guts, I believe is the name in the war game of one of their higher ranking soldiers or like leaders, I think.
And the ogres are generally kind of distinguishable by their huge, tremendous gut.
Yeah, you know, which is actually more muscle than it's more muscle than fat. And there's a line in the book, the army book, that says, "Such is his resilience that even impaling an ogre upon a lance is no defense against having one's head caved in by the returning blow." So that's a pretty evocative picture.
One thing I think that was important to note about the ogres is that they are large, they are fat, they are more or less your stereotypical ogre. They have a small head, huge belly. They look like a giant fat man, probably with very pale skin. But some of the things that are very unique to the Warhammer ogre, I thought, was that their stomach is not just a big fat man's stomach. It is, instead of fat, ogres tend to have this just tremendously muscled physique, and mm-hmm. in particular, their stomach is more lined with huge, thick layers of muscle, and most of the ogre's vital organs are actually in that area. It's not so much in their chest like you would a human. So, you know, stabbing an ogre or damaging them, it tends to be much more difficult to hit a vital organ. Mm-hmm. And most ogres will wear a huge protective disc or shield or plate around their stomachs and rarely anything else. Maybe a loincloth if you're lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I pray that I'm lucky.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't want to
So those muscles actually help them digest the food. Those muscles help protect them. And ogre culture is very driven by eating. Eating is a huge, huge thing in the ogre culture. And maybe to kind of drive us in a little bit further, you know, Lester, what do you know about kind of where would you encounter ogres in the Warhammer world?
Well, originally, I believe they came from Cathay, and they were driven out by, like, the dragons and the men that live over there, and they were mm-hmm. driven into the mountains of Morn. So they tend to live more to the east of the Empire, but...
Beyond the Darklands. So we had mentioned the Chaos Dwarves a moment ago. So we've got the Empire, we've got the World's Edge Mountains to the east. Beyond the east is the Darklands, where you've got the Chaos Dwarves, and then beyond the Chaos Dwarves is the Mountains of Morn.
Mm-hmm.
Which is actually the new border, the new eastern border of the Shmatwau.
Yeah, so considering they come from Cathay, they kind of, if you look at pictures of the Warhammer ogre, they have this Chinese, or almost more so... Like
Mongol warrior.
Yeah, Mongol
really
warrior.
Really fat, ugly one.
Yeah, a big, fat, ugly Mongol warrior.
Was that the train?
That was the train. No, for everybody listening, I do not live in New York. I live in Mountain View, right across from good old BART. So,
I thought you lived on a train track underneath.
I do. I'm Harry Pottering it right now, dude. I'm flying over the train tracks.
So when those ogres actually were being exiled from Cathay and they were working their way towards the Mountains of Morn, many, many of them died, and it became this. They became scrawny, and food was very difficult to come by. They often ate each other, and so once they actually settled in the Mountains of Morn, they ousted the giants who had lived there at the time, and basically took over. The lack of food going up to that point made them essentially worship the ability to eat and just gorge. And that has translated directly into their culture now, where they will literally eat anything. If they get in a fight with somebody and they win, even another ogre, like let's say they're arguing over who should eat some piece of meat and one guy wins, it's customary for him to eat a couple fingers off the other ogre.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's like, and of course, like they have a lot of similarities to orcs, you know, with kind of the bigger and the badder and who can eat the most, who can beat each other up the most is going to be in charge.
I believe the name of their god is the Great Maw, or at least the entity that they worship.
Yeah, he's called the Great Maw.
Yeah, that's
kind of a there was some speculation as to whether that was a comet or the Great Devourer. Ogres are not particularly smart. We can start off with that. The Great Maw, they thought was a comet. Everybody kind of thinks it was a comet that landed, destroyed tons and tons of stuff, and essentially left a giant crater, which looked like a giant mouth that had destroyed or swallowed up anything that was there. So they kind of worship that as the Great Maw. Now, some people may note the Great Maw is also a location in the Western Ocean, which is a giant whirlpool. I don't think those are really meant to be the same thing. I'm not really 100% sure there. It's kind of hard to tell.
Yeah, there's a little bit of overlapping inconsistencies within the Warhammer mythos, if you will.
So what about the Noblars? Do you guys want to talk about them for a little bit? Because they're kind of directly related to the ogre culture.
Yeah. Well, they're kind of like the scavengers, I guess you can say, because what they do is they follow the ogres, especially into battle, and they're the ones that are like the little thieves that, you know, they try and steal stuff. But it's kind of funny how they play out. I mean, I'm not sure if
they're very similar to goblins or snotlings.
It looked like a mixture between the two.
One of the things I actually really liked about the ogres was that it is the Noblars live in the society of the ogres, and they are kind of the workforce. But at the same time, it is very customary for an ogre to have a favorite Noblar, which he is kind of his. I'm not sure if you want to call it his pal, but at least almost like a pet. And it's bad form for an ogre to eat another ogre's favorite Noblar. Mm. And that is cause for fighting.
I think it's pretty impractical for them to have such big noses and live with such stinking beasts as ogres.
I don't think it's their choice.
Yeah, I bet their life just sucks.
Well, the Noblars are not only pets, but they're also a source of food for the ogres. So,
exactly.
I mean, the ogres will eat each other. They'll eat anything they find. And they are fully capable of digesting bone and wood and, of course, meat.
But isn't their magic called gut magic? Isn't that what the title of it is?
Yes.
A lot of the ogre magic and shamans tend to be butchers and have something to do with food and blood magic and things like that. So it's very much a kind of a shamanistic culture along with a lot of similarities with what you kind of already know about orcs and the bigger, the badder, and the, you know, you just kind of challenge the current leader to take over.
Mm-hmm.
And if you fail, you get eaten.
You failed.
So there are actually, the ogres are in the ogre kingdoms, which is the Mountains of Morn, but it's also not uncommon for the ogres to sell their services as mercenaries to armies around the Empire or the Old World as a whole. It's not something you're going to come across often, but the ogres are integrated into the Empire culture.
Yeah.
Typically as bodyguards.
Well, they're mercs. You can see some of them are hired guns.
Like dogs of war. Some of you guys may recall from the Warhammer Fantasy Battles, which has pretty much been discontinued at this point now that the Ogre Kingdoms have their own army list. But do you guys think that the ogres have kind of been phased out of the Empire in modern editions?
I wouldn't say phased out, but I don't think that they, in the lieu of, you know, the Warhammer Fantasy roleplay, I just don't think that they're big of as an importance as maybe some of the other races are.
I just think that I can't even recall the last time I've heard of in any of the role-playing supplements an ogre being mentioned in the Empire. It seems, I'm not sure if they're kind of trying to take a focus for the game and push it more towards the real-world analog, or are they trying to and kind of push out some of those more fantastical, strange, kooky elements of old-school Warhammer ogres maybe being part of that.
Yeah.
Well, they had it in the Old World Bestiary, which wasn't out, you know, it wasn't too long ago that came out, so. And they mentioned them being mercenaries there, so.
Oh, did they? Oh, cool. Okay.
They have a really cool photo for him, actually, of this guy who's got, like, all these swords hanging from him and a little cane and stuff. It looks really neat.
So. Well, they're in the Blood Bowl team for the humans, so.
Oh, cool.
You know, they ogres are a huge part of Blood Bowl. Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully we'll see them come back at some point soon. Now, ogres are not all just the normal ogres that we come to expect. There are also things like chaos ogres. There are things like dragon ogres and things called dragon ogre Shaggoth. Who's familiar with those?
Shaggoth, I've seen. He's the beastman, right?
He's the big burly. We'll start with chaos ogres. May or may not have a direct relationship to ogres themselves. The chaos ogres are they really don't even look like an ogre. They just kind of have that vague shape. So I'm not going to talk about them much because it's really hard to tell if they even have a relationship to it or not. But dragon ogres are really an interesting beast. They are essentially from the torso down. A reptilian creature with four legs, very much like a dragon or drake, and then from the chest up, very similar to an ogre. Those were featured in the creature's vault, and in addition to that, the ones that actually live long enough and become large enough become known as Shaggoth, a dragon ogre Shaggoth, and those are enormous. Now, a neat thing about dragon ogres is they're typically up in the north, kind of in the Norska area, or as you get into the mountains, as you get closer to the Chaos Wastes. And dragon ogres, a long time ago, made a pact with Chaos and decided to eternally fight for them in exchange for an externally long life. And from what I can tell, dragon ogres actually don't ever die of old age. So the longer they live, the bigger they get. And these dragon ogres, they sleep in the mountains, and they feed off the electric storms of the world. And when an electric storm comes, it wakes them from their slumber. The dragon ogres come out. They get up on the mountains and try and get shocked by lightning or absorb the electrical energy, which helps them grow and replenish their energy. So the dragon ogres that have been awake or live the longest become enormous. There are tales of them being as large as even a hill or a small mountain. But it requires an increasingly larger storm in order to wake the larger ones up. So I see some kind of cool opportunities for some role-playing elements as a storm begins brewing. It could actually begin waking larger and larger creatures if you're up there playing in the mountains.
Yeah.
So that could be fun. But woe to those who use any kind of electrical abilities on a dragon ogre, because I think it heals them, it revives them, it makes them stronger and crazier and bloodthirsty, so steer clear of that.
All right, you mean he's not fluffy and you can't go up and hug him?
Oh, I think they
do. And call him Kitty?
So what? Do you guys have any other last bits we want to throw into the ogres?
I have one. This is a question for everybody. Cookie Monster. He is considered the great devourer of cookies. Is he an ogre? Answer. No?
I think he's an ogre god.
Yes, there we go.
He's too great to be an ogre, but yeah.
He is too great.
He's never-ending hunger for cookies. Yeah.
he might be the great maw.
Yeah, exactly. He's the great maw.
See how GW has integrated into little children's programs? Telling you.
So they've been feeding us that one since childhood.
Yep, exactly.
Now I've got this image of Bert as Sigmar that's going to be stuck in my head. Because you're just doing everything wrong, and he has to nitpick everything. So.
All right, well, when we come back, we'll answer some of you guys' questions, and then we'll wrap it up. As always, you can submit your questions and comments to recklessdice@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter @recklessdice, like Skippin, who emails, "Love the show and love the game. I just don't get to play as often as I'd like. This year, I'm finally going to Gen Con. I was excited to get into this con, and I was really hoping to play some Warhammer 3rd Edition. However, I only found one single game of Warhammer being offered, and that was either 1st or 3rd Edition. Do you think that this does not bode well for the future of the game? I would have expected at least 4 to 5 games, and I would have thought Fantasy Flight Games would have offered some, but they aren't offering any of their own RPGs. I would think a convention of this size would at least get 3 or so Warhammer Fantasy games. That's an interesting point. What do you guys think about... there's a couple of questions in here. One is kind of, what do you guys think the state or health of the game is? But also, Fantasy Flight's interactions in conventions or helping to promote the game by facilitating games.
Okay, well, can I just cut in? Gen Con, they have to understand, Gen Con is not well known for its RPGs. Gen Con's known for board games, miniatures, tabletop games. That's where they really focus. I mean, Fantasy Flight, when they go there, they're out promoting their board games. They're out promoting, you know, their new exciting things that they got coming out. I'm sure they're going to have their stuff out for Blood Bowl. They'll probably have some demos out there. But a lot of miniature gaming is where you're found at Gen Con. You know, you've got Privateer Press, Games Workshop has even gone there, Malifaux from Weird Miniatures. I don't think that Gen Con's the atmosphere for RPGs. Of course, maybe you're going to have some people go there and play, but it's not really a con that's created to enhance that type of RPGs. They're more tabletops. That's where they get a lot of their people that come. I mean, they have tons of tournaments. They don't have any RPG tournaments, but they have tons of gaming tournaments. So I think
that's some good insight on that.
Yeah,
I did not know.
Well, that's because I was hoping to go to Gen Con. And the main reason I was going is because Privateer Press, I'm into Malifaux, I'm into War Machine, I'm also into 40K. So that's the whole reason. They have tons of tournaments there. You're not going to find very many RPG players. If you do, there are people that, at the end of the day of playing tournaments, they're sitting and like whipping out their Warhammer Fantasy role-playing book, and they're doing an adventure, having beers, relaxing. It's not a place where they're going to play fantasy.
Maybe try and do some pickup games there. They're not terribly hard. You know, pull out your stuff. If you meet some people, see if they want to play. You only need 2 or 3 people to get a good game going.
Exactly.
And everybody at cons are certainly willing to try a new game.
Exactly. And if you're an open person and you put your stuff out there and you're meeting people, you know, you're going to gain some people that will want to play. But it's just, unfortunately, it's not a con that is generated itself towards RPGs.
Michael, are you a big con player?
The other thing is, I mean, this is my experience from KublaCon, is that what they're offering or what people are offering isn't necessarily the same mix as what people are actually playing.
Yeah.
Like there's certain popular games that I didn't see any sessions of at all. And I know there are people playing it because KublaCon's over in San Francisco. I know people in the Bay Area are playing certain games, and there just wasn't any offerings for them. Well, and then there's other games I'm like, people still play that, and there's like 3 or 4 or 5 things. And I think it's just a little bit of a luck of the draw.
I mean, I live in San Jose, so I'm a Bay Area native, you know, and I moved here to Mountain View. But one of the things when I was looking, and I told Jesse, I mean, Jesse, when we went, what was it, probably about 2 years ago, we went and played. There was no one playing Warhammer Fantasy. You brought it out, and you brought me in, and we went in and played our own game. But it was funny because we went into this dining room. There was like, remember the restaurant that they closed
Actually,
out?
It's the same place Doc and I played.
Okay, so we went in there, and there was tons of people playing board games, playing role playing games. So it's not about, even if the event doesn't host it, there are a ton of people that are there that might be willing to play. And if you're willing to go seek those people out, you might actually be able to, you know, find a group of people to play with. But the problem is,
what do you guys think though, that when, what do you think Fantasy Flight's duty is to help facilitate or promote the games at these conventions? Do you think they have any duty?
Well, I just think that they have so many other products that they release. Like, as Dan was saying, I mean, it is geared more towards miniatures and board games, right? And what is Fantasy Flight Games? It's a board game company, essentially. The role-playing game portion of that company is actually relatively small. So it doesn't surprise me that they don't offer a bunch of stuff. As far as if should they, I think that it would be a very good way of bringing more people into the fold.
Is it common for a company to provide role-playing demos at a convention or something like this? It seems very difficult for a company to provide enough GMs to support bringing people in to run a demo that would last several hours.
That's true.
From what I've seen in the past, they kind of encourage these introductory scenarios that fans can go to a store and run and kind of that seems to facilitate a little better. As much as I'd love to have a Fantasy Flight Games sanctioned introductory adventure at a con, I'd love to participate and it'd be a blast, mm-hmm. but I think the reality of it is that seems pretty unrealistic.
Well, the way they did it for D&D 4th, the last thing I saw, they were at a con and they had the main developer there running a game with very famous people, like Ed Greenwood was playing, and there were a couple other really famous people like R.A. Salvatore, and then they invited several people from the crowd to come play, and it was in a big conference
room. D&D seems like a franchise that is so big or well known that you can actually get away with doing something like that. But if you don't have the inherent base crowd to feed off of,
I think there's enough people interested in Warhammer that if you had a game going in a convention room with some interesting people, you could make it more like a spectator sport, because a role playing game is very hard to put together as far as like a come and play my role playing game at a convention. That it takes a lot of effort.
Well,
it takes
a long time. I do know that Fantasy Flight is planning to do stuff. When I believe it was on the Gen Con website, because they're releasing the Black Crusade, which is the Chaos Space Marine.
Yeah.
You know, so they're doing a thing at Gen Con where they have, I think, is it Gav Thorpe and I think a couple other guys. I don't want to screw up on names, but I think they're going there to demo the game and they're bringing people in. But then also Fantasy Flight is going to be at, what's it, Games Day, I think, to try and help promo the launch of the Black Crusade. You know, because as you've seen, Fantasy Flight's going off in different directions with the whole Warhammer thing with GW. But as Lester really nailed it on the head, you know, Fantasy Flight is a board game company. They're not really, their sole market is directed towards board games. It's not to say that, you know, they don't pay that much attention to RPGs. It's just when they got a con like this, they're going to push where they know that their money can be made.
So, yeah, they're going to show off all their new fancy board games that they're going to release. And I have a feeling... Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, they have a lot of stuff coming out, too. That's, I mean, they have the Crusade, was it Black Crusade, the Chaos game?
Mm-hmm.
They have the Rune Age card game, which is and they have the new Cthulhu one, too, that I forgot what it's called, Elder Sign, coming out. So they're going to be premiering, probably.
You got Gears of War coming out.
Yeah, Gears of War.
And that's going to attract a lot of people, you know. So when they go to a convention like this, it's sad to say, but RPG is not really as big as of a draw as if you were to go to like Gen Con or something that is an RPG driven convention.
Yeah, I would still speculate that they are going to have a presence there for Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay. Like, they'll probably have somebody discussing what's coming up. You know, they'll have
We had last year at Gen Con, I believe, was the first availability of was it the Gathering Storm at the time. Are we expecting the Blackfyre Pass to maybe have an early availability at Gen Con?
It might.
What do you guys think?
I think it will, because so many people, you have to understand that helps drive the market. Why would Fantasy Flight not take the opportunity? So many characters, such as like weird miniatures. You guys played Malifaux before? Ever heard of Malifaux?
Yeah,
they do. Okay, so they do a thing called Nightmare Collection, where they only create these for the convention, and they're specific models. And I'm not sure if you ever looked on eBay, but some of these go for like $199, and you buy them for $60. But they only make them for that convention. But they also do pre-sales for stuff that would be going out in December or in November. I wouldn't doubt if you don't see Fantasy Flight giving out stuff before its production date.
Well, I think Blackfyre Pass will be released at Gen Con, where it will be, you know, maybe a simultaneous release. Maybe you get it a couple weeks before you actually get it on the shelves. But I think they'll probably have a preview of what the next up-and-coming thing is. Because, I mean, I believe at last year's Gen Con, when they did Sifting Through the Shadows, they had Signs of Faith was the one. And then it didn't come out for like 2.5 months. But I do believe they had that, and I can't remember what the other summer release was that year.
I thought it was Gathering Storm.
Gathering Storm, yeah, I'm pretty sure you're right. And so I have a feeling that's what's going to happen, is they'll have Blackfyre Pass there for purchase, and then they'll also show what the next thing is, because they really haven't. Like, we're pretty much in the dark as far as what's coming.
The Blackfyre Pass is the last piece of content in the Sifting Through the Shadows, separate from the very vague allusion to the Soneshi supplement.
Yeah. Well, I got to say is, boys, we're planning to do Gen Con next year.
I'd love to go, man.
I think that would be an awesome thing and be able to possibly get some interviews. I think that would be a great addition for the show. So. Cool.
Well, Dan, close us out.
All right, and that'll be a wrap for this episode of the Reckless Dice Podcast. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our next episode. Be sure to comment on the site, Reckless Dice, which is now back up. Send us an email at recklessdice@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at Reckless Dice, as well as our new Facebook. Please feel free to post anything with regards to Warhammer Fantasy Roleplaying. And give us a review on iTunes. So, thanks for listening, guys.
Good night, everyone. And a special thanks to Michael Wilson for joining us.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
All right. We will talk to you next week.
Peace.
Welcome. I'm going to start that over. I have the ability to. I'm editing.
Welcome, slaves, to Reckless Dice, where Jesse Burke will take your brains.
I'm saving that for the end.
Do we all get that? If we all screw up, we can go back, or is it just you?
It depends how funny it is.
Yeah, if it's funny, like
and if it's not, and if it's not the intro, that's a little different.
It's not funny to me, you know.
All right.